to Kayak Fishing Radio Mid-Atlantic. I am your host, Mark Lenny Crew Wheeler, and we got a long show tonight. It's going to be a great show. We've got, I'm going to do basically two-parter tonight, two different main sections tonight. One's going to be on anchoring. I know there's been a bunch of questions on Yak Angler. About anchoring. We're going to talk about that. And then we're going to get into clear water bass fishing. You know, bass lakes with the clear water, lakes with clear, rivers with clear water. And do the first part tonight. The reason I'm doing two parts on the clear water is to allow questions to be sent into Yak Angler. I'm going to set up a brain fart. I'm going to set up a forum on there or a thread so you can post your questions and I can talk back and, you know, second part show, which will be next week, we can delve into a little bit more. We've got, I actually have a caller. All right. Eric, 908, you are live on Kayak Fishing Radio.
Hey, Mark, Matt Trucks, Yak Chum in the house.
What's going on, man?
Not much. Thought I'd call in and give you a little call support.
Thanks, buddy.
Hey, no problem. How'd you guys end up doing Saturday night down at the ships over there?
I had one run, but just couldn't get him to button up tight enough to keep him, so.
Okay. Yeah. We got out there, I guess, around 11. Got set up for the morning run and nothing in the morning either, so.
Yeah.
I just caught one dogfish. Nice big one.
Nice. Did you keep him?
Nah, because I didn't feel like getting the guts all over me. It was a nice size. It's probably at least a 32-incher.
Nice. Yeah, that would have made a couple of really nice fish fillet sandwiches.
Yeah, no doubt. But, once again, man, good fishing with you.
Yeah, it was a blast having you guys down from Jersey. For those that don't know, Yak Chum came down from Jersey with a bunch of other guys. And, you know, they enjoyed the cool breezes of Kifted Peak, so.
Yeah, Kifted Peak's an awesome place to fish. If you've never fished it, definitely try to get down there in the December area of time for the striped bass run, or even just the togging is great there, generally. So.
Oh, yeah. If you can get in there, there's a couple of places that a lot of people pass over that have a good rock pile where they're, or a big boulder or a big piece of that concrete will fall in, and those tog will be sitting right underneath there enjoying the limelight. Well, cool, man. stick around. We're gonna, you know, delve into this anchoring and then the clear water bass fishing, smallies,
sounds good.
The whole kit and caboodle. And both of these topics tonight came from Yak Angler. If you don't know what Yak Angler is,
looking for a group of kayak anglers to share your kayak fishing adventures with? Check out yakangler.com, your ultimate fishing resource.
There you go. Both of these topics came from Yak Angler. You know, a lot of people, you know, post questions on Yak Angler all the time. You know, what about this? What about that? And I'm actually going to start taking show ideas from Yak Angler, from questions that you post. So this way, you know, I can type it up and you can understand it, but that's where you can join the show and ask questions and not lose your mind. Plus, it's easier on my fingers. So let's get right to it. Anchoring. Let's go over some safety rules with anchoring, okay, first off, and some things that you really want to practice and understand. The first thing that I stress wholeheartedly in anchoring is only anchor from the bow or the stern, preferably the bow. And I'll explain why. When anchoring, You're based from the bow of the stern. Like I said, my head is just not right tonight, man. When anchoring, okay, you're basically just holding yourself in place. That's the whole idea of anchoring, okay? Not drag chains, anything else. That's a whole different ball game. But from anchoring off the bow or the stern, you are basically giving yourself the opportunity. Sorry, I'm trying to read the chat room at the same time. Man, this is so hard for me tonight. But you're basically just creating what's the best way to put it? You're basically cutting through the water without using your paddle, okay? The current, whatever. It's easier for me to explain it like this. You always want to anchor from the bow of the stern and never from your port or starboard, your sides, okay? The reason for that is simple like this. It's what I call submarining or crankbaiting, okay? And everyone goes, what the hell am I talking about? When you have a heavy current, you're in a river, you're in the ocean, whatever, okay? You're creating a lot of pressure on the connecting side, whether that's on the bow, the stern, or either side of the kayak, okay? When you hook it up to the side of your kayak, what will happen is if you catch the water just right or you lean over just right and you that water pressure, that current movement, catch that edge of your kayak, you basically turn that kayak into a large crankbait. It's going to dive down on you. You're going to be floating there going, what the hell just happened? Okay? If you do it off the bow, you have the opportunity to release it and get up and be fine. But if, like I said, anchor from the side, it's really dangerous. It's just not good. So we're not even talking about anchoring from the side. Just please don't do it. Period. End point. It's a bad habit to get into. Okay? Anchor from the bow. Anchor from the stern. But we're going to talk about anchoring from the bow tonight. And how do you do that? Yeah, anchoring can be kind of nasty, but sometimes you need to do it. Let's talk about different anchors. All right. There are, let's say, five different types. You got the Navy or Danforth anchor. That's the one everyone knows that is. It's the one with the big two lobes on the side with the main post. Not really the greatest for kayaks. They're heavy. They take up a lot of space. You know, they're just really bulky. That, and they're really hard to pull up if they get really dug in there. Next one is one a lot of people use is the claw type, the folding claw. Really good anchors. They're small. They don't take up a whole lot of space. They're really easy to use. Basically, you just let them out, drop them back, and you're golden. Only problem with I see in them, rocky conditions. You get that anchor caught in those rocks, you're not getting it back. sorry, chat room's getting funny. Okay, we did. Sorry, wreck anchors. Okay, I'm gonna explain you how to make your own wreck anchor. I know Ocean's East is probably going, no, don't do that. But easiest way to make your own wreck anchor, and this is if you have the ability to pour lead, and please do all the safety precautions of pouring lead. Never inside. Well ventilated area. Wear proper protective equipment. Please know what you're doing. Okay. So, what I do when I make my wreck anchor is you can go out and get conduit. You can get a 10-foot section of conduit, or you can buy the chunks of conduit at most hardware stores. What you're looking at is about the 2-inch inside diameter conduit and about 6 inches long. That's going to give you a pound and a half, about 24-ounce anchor, and that's more than enough to get up to 50 feet with no issues in depth. Next you're going to need is some sort of prongs, okay? The way the wreck anchors work on the big boats is it's rebar. Rebar bends really easily, okay? But it's strong enough that it'll hold. So what I use, if you can find it, is baling wire. Yeah, the kind of wire that they use on fences, stuff like that. You're looking for what is it? I think it's a number 8, number 6. I've got a load of it in my garage. It's a really thick stuff. It's about maybe an 1/8 inch thick. It's absolutely perfect for this. You stretch it out, you cut out your lengths. You're looking at about 18-inch pieces sticking out, of tongs sticking out. So about 24 inches, okay? It's going to bring it all the way in. And the next thing I use to anchor, to actually hold my road to the anchor itself, it seems kind of basic, but a basic eye ring. Okay, those screwable ones, the longer the shank, the better. It means more digging power. And that goes into one side of the conduit. Old school coat hangers. Simple as that. And then just slowly pour the lead in, let it solidify on one end, okay? And yeah, usually I'll pour it in from the bottom, or it would be the bottom where the actual anchor piece sticks out, until I get a good solid bottom on it, okay? And that's going to be about a 1/2 inch. It's going to take some time. It's going to take some playing around with it until you can get it just right. And then fill it up, and while it's still liquid state, jam those tongs in there and just hold them in place. It'll solidify around them, and you're done. Simple as that. Easy peasy. We've done 3 anchors, right? 3 anchor types? Matt? No? Okay. Next style, and the one that I use 90% of the time, I guess we'll only do 4 anchors. That's really all we need. It's a plow style. This is the type that I love because I do a lot of fishing in mud and sand, stuff like that. It's a real light anchor. And really easy to stick on the bottom. Plus, it comes with a double connection point, which the problem with a lot of the claws is you won't get that double connection. What I mean is two areas to connect your anchor road to. And notice I'm saying road, not rope, because technically the whole line from boat to anchor is called the road. Naval, nautical terminology is very confusing for those that don't know it. But it's just the road. It could be chain, it could be rope, it could be, you know, silk. It could be the drawstring from your sweatpants. It doesn't really matter. It's all just road. Keeps it simple. Neptune stole your plow anchor. We're going to get to diameter rope in 1 minute. I finished with this plow there, JPSW Fish. And you know what, let me do this because I haven't done yet. I'd like to say thank you to everyone that showed up tonight already. Mr. Chip Gibson, remember Tuesday night, Thursday night is Chip Show, 8 o'clock, same time, same place. We have a guest. Welcome, JPSW Fish. What's going on, man? Mr. King Rat, the king of the HRBT. Mr. Mark Lozier, Tuesday night host, along with his wife, Chris. My daughter in the background. And Yak Chum, you've met and heard his wonderful voice already. But if you have any ability to do a double connection point, always go at the bottom or where the main holding power is. That's where you want to put your main connection, run the rope up the main line, and either use some 10-pound test, something that you can break real easily. Zip ties work great, the lighter ones, just so that if you get it gets snagged, give it a pop, it breaks that thing, and it actually pulls up from the backside. It's pretty simple. The plows are great, especially in soft bottom. You're actually going to go, you know, when you put it in, it's going to drag for a second, and that's just that plow just digging in, and then once it sticks, it's done. You're not, unless you give it a really good pull, that's where that breakable works. Great for the plows. Once you pop that breakable loose, especially in lakes or rivers, once you pop that breakable loose, it comes up, no issues, no fuss, no muss, and you're done. All right. I said we're going to do those. Next part, rope. Okay. Go to the road. What I use is, trying to think. It's not nylon. Oh, it is nylon. I'm looking at it right now. I use a quarter-inch nylon basic dock rope, if you can find it, the bulk rope. I have 100 feet of it going down to 18 inches of quarter-inch chain, okay? Why chain? It's for two reasons. One, I connect the chain with a couple of easy clips, the ones that you just tighten down that are threaded. If they rust up, I don't really care. I can just cut it off with the cutting wheel when I get home. I'm not worried about, you know, oyster shells rubbing up against the knot, break the knot, and I lost my anchor. This would be really bad if I really need that anchor for whatever reason. So that nice short set of chain, 12 to 18 inches is all you need. Don't need a heavy-duty chain. Just a quarter-inch, you know, gap chain. The cheap stuff is perfect. Okay, plus it's just wide enough that you can get a zip tie in there and lock it in for the upper portion. And then the quarter-inch, it's nice. It's easier on my hands. You know, when you start talking about paracords and stuff like that, and you start really wrenching on that anchor, especially if you get stuck, okay, it's going to really tear up your hands something fierce. You could go with eighth-inch if you want to, if you're using, like, you know, 300 feet, like if you're Isaac Miller out west. Dude uses like 800 feet of anchor road to anchor up out there. You know, he's using a whole bunch of other stuff to go along with that. But for anywhere in the East Coast, really theoretically, quarter inch is overkill. Eighth inch is perfect. I like the quarter inch, like I said, because it doesn't tear up my hands as bad. Plus, it's easily available. Now, before I finish with that, let's talk about holding all that anchor line. If you have a Jackson kayak, you've already got a great system underneath the seat, okay? And we'll talk about that in a second. But for everyone else, okay, a native, you guys place to hide that anchor rod underneath the seat. Anglers, same thing, a pro anglers. How to keep the anchor rod from being a big, total, absolute cluster bomb is really simple. Lowe's, Home Depot, all sell a rope. It's a quarter-inch rope. It's in 100-foot sections. It's always a bright color. It's a great anchor rope. It's cheap. It's only like $3, okay? But it comes with its own reel kind of thing. And right there, you have your way of holding your line. It'll hold 200 feet. I've tried it. It's just a really cool little setup. It's cheap. It's a really strong rope. I use it on making my nets. If anyone has had the opportunity to and live in Virginia Beach or in the Hampton Roads area, you've been to Sandbridge this past summer. You saw the new net that's on the pier net there. That's the rope I'm talking about. It's really strong. It's colorful. You can't miss it. it's what I use, okay? It just roll it up right on this thing, and you're done. It stows right away. No issues, no tangles. It's a good heavy-duty rope. And it floats, which is positive, and we'll talk about that in a second. For those of us with seats that sit up off of our deck, we have a great opportunity to lock up, basically, is how I put it, to stow our anchor line. That's just underneath our seat. You just pile it up underneath the seat. If you do it right, you never have any tangles. And it's going to take some time for you to realize how to do that correctly. But once you do, you're like, oh, why didn't I think of this before? So that's how you stow it. Let's talk about going from, the transitions. Everyone wants to put floats on there, and everyone overthinks this, okay? Really simple. And how simple this truly is. Find a crab float. Make your own float, pool noodle, whatever, okay? And then you got your anchor rope all played out in your yard, okay? That's the first thing to do. You play it out in your yard. Take the end of the rope, okay, and run it from your bow to behind your seat, about a foot behind your seat, okay? Thread that pool noodle, that crab float, whatever, down to the bow, all right? If I confuse anyone, please let me know. Down in front of there, and then make a stop hitch, or throw a couple of granny knots in there. Just keep that float from coming back and coming off your line, okay? And then that's it. No other knots, nothing hard. Right there you go. You have a float to your line. So if you have to let go of it, it's going to be there. Why is that? Okay. When you create your anchor trolley, all right, either it's a drillable, non-drillable, you're using carabiners, you've got your mother-in-law's teeth, or what's left of them, holding everything up, whatever. Okay. When you play your line through there, okay, and you send that O-ring, mother-in-law's teeth, whatever, to the bow or to the stern or whichever you want to do it, and you lock it in place. I hate my mother-in-law. Anyway, and you lock that anchor in place, whether you're using a clam style rope holder, the S-curve type, a chipmunk to hold on to it, whatever, okay? If you need to let go of that quick, all right, you can do that and have your anchor, you have your float, you have nothing obstructing the ability for that rope to get out of that, anchor trolley without any issues whatsoever. I know that's I'm kind of vague. Just bring it right to the anchor trolley ring. It's pretty simple. I'm going to post some pictures. If not, I think Kevin's got a video on it. I think he's done, or I know Rob Choi has one. There we go. Go to angling-addict.com. Rob Choi's got a great little, how-to on how he does it. He plays his anchor road on his deck through loops. Again, he's been doing it for a while. It's a great way of doing it. And check that out, how he has it set up. And you see where he's got, the knot, the float, the knot, and then just the road to where it connects to the clip, I-ring, whatever. And like I said, it's for safety issues to be able to just let it go out. That's basically it for anchoring. Again, please do not try to anchor off the side of the kayak. It'll just create issues. Yeah, what's up, man?
I don't know if you want to go over dive reels within the anchor system.
You know what? I have never used a dive reel.
I haven't either, but it looks like a cool idea.
Yeah, definitely. My only issue with that is, you know, if it starts to slip, you know what I mean? If I'm anchoring up on a spot and that dive reel starts to slip and I'm trying to get that back, you know, it's going to be hard for me to reach it, if that makes any sense. Just using that.
Well, all you're using the way I picture it, all you're using the dive reel for is just for stowing your anchor line. You still tie
right.
it off through the trolley ring to a cleat.
Right. I'm thinking of another thing. I personally, you know, for me, it's a great idea, but simple, stupid kind of thing. I just see that as, getting in the way more than anything. You know, it takes up a buttload of space, the one I saw on Yak Angler.
Yeah, that's true.
You know.
Yeah, just forget I bring it up there.
Oh, no, great point. You know, and the great thing about that that rope that I was talking about from Lowe's or Home Depot is that you can actually put the line. It's got a hole in already to put the line through. So you could theoretically, that's a dive reel right there. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, so that's, there's options. And personally, the best thing to do half the time is just to play with it until you find what works for you. You know, and as long as you have the basic things, never off the side of the kayak, off the bow, preferably the stern as a secondary. Finding what works for you, what position works for you, how to work it correctly is all things that you need, that I could explain, but until you're out in the water and truly experience it for yourself, and then you go, aha, that's what he was talking about. Or, okay, I understand why he was kind of vague on this area because, my area is different than the guy that keeps on rambling on Wednesday night says. That's all. Especially when it comes down to safety, I can give you the basics, but from then on, it's all completely up to you. But please, 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 only anchor from the bow of the stern, preferably the bow. That's what it's created for, to bust through waves, to bust through wakes, whatever. Sterns are usually much lower in the water. You add the pressure of an anchor on there, it's going to drop even farther. And one good wake or wave and, you could be submarining. All right. That's going to be it for anchoring. Again, please go to Yak Angler if you have any questions, start a thread. Hey, what the hell is this guy talking about? Can you explain better? I'm going to post a video on there of Chad Hoover. He did this, 4 years ago? He talked about anchoring. He uses the plow anchor a lot. He uses the claw style and how he sets his up. It's a great video. Go to angling-addict.com, Rob Choi's website. He's got a great, basic how-to on his. So please check that out. Let's see here. For those that don't know, because now this is my break and, chance to get a drink or whatever. Coming up in 2 months is this.
Boondoggle, boondoggle. Boondoggle? What the heck is a boondoggle? Come out President's Day weekend to Cars Park in Titusville, Florida for family fun, great fishing in the no motor zone, and hang out with a bunch of crazy kayakers.
We're going streaking! Yeah!
Put your clothes back on, Chuck. For more information, please visit yakangler.com, your ultimate resource for kayak fishermen.
That's right. If you don't know or you have any questions about awesomeness, then you really need to look at the boondoggle. It's going to be an incredible time. I know we got the guy from the Bahamas going to show up. I know the guys from Texas. I think we got some guys from other climes and places going to show up. This is going to be absolutely awesome. Cars Park is looking like it's going to be, and the No Motor Zone in general, it's going to be a great time. Out here and catch some awesome fish. Should be a ton of fun. So for more information, please go to yakangler.com/boondoggle for more information. All right. Let's talk about some fishing finally. All right. And there's in bass fishing, okay, there's two types of water usually all for lakes, and that's dirty water or semi-clear, which, you know, stuff that, you know, most lakes are. And then you have the gin clear lakes, the ones you can see the fish on the bottom in 120 feet kind of thing. All right. You know, every state has a clear lake. Kansas has one. Florida has them. Virginia has a couple.
Jersey's got one.
Jersey's got them. Every state has that clear lake, that spring-fed lake that is just clear, as clear as could be. The Great Lakes are getting that way, thanks to the zebra mussels. Most rivers that were dirty 10 years ago that now have zebra mussels in them. Everyone says zebra mussels are awful. Yes, they are a nuisance species and whatever else. But they do a great thing in cleaning up the water, okay? Now, the thing is that they eat most of the plankton and whatever else, really become an issue for shad and stuff like that, but just like anything else, turn into a great feeding food thingamajigger. Anyway, let's get to this thing with clear lakes. And I'm going to break down clear lakes into two subspecies, okay? And that's shallow. Oh, my God. Oh, sorry. Dinner's catching up to me. And that's shallow, and we're talking anything from 15 feet to less, and deep. We're talking 15 and more. The reason I say 15 is because they're two completely different things. The fish act completely different in both styles. And, you know, tonight we're going to talk about the shallow. And next week we'll talk about the deep. Because, like I said, they're two different animals all in themselves. They're perfect for those of us that fish different styles too. Shallow bodies of water are great for beginners. Okay, they're great because you know what the fish are going to be 90% of the time. They're going to be on the banks. They're going to be within 20 feet, maybe I'm going to say 15 feet of the bank. Okay, they're going to be in the thickest stuff. They're going to be in the rocks. They're going to be in the fall downs, the shopping carts, the tires. Yeah, I say shopping carts and tires. They're going to be where they can hide. Why is that? And there's a big difference between deep water lakes. Reason they stick so hard to cover like that is because of birds of prey. Ospreys, eagles, gannets, whatever. So that shallow lake, that osprey could be sitting up there, cars, old houses, exactly. Those old reservoirs where the dam flooded the little town, awesome. Anyway, that bird of prey sitting 100 feet off the water, looks down, sees that bass in 3 feet, okay, that's what he's getting. He's going to get that bass. All right, if they're sitting out in the open. So, you know, cover is key. All right. With clear lakes, all right, if you love motor oil Senkos, more power to you. You might catch one or two bass. But you're going to lose your mind when you see that bass and you keep pitching to that bait to him and he just doesn't want to eat it. Mainly because there isn't a whole lot of bait in the water that looks like a motor oil Senko. Okay? Unless you know that lake is filled with helder mites. All right? And that's a lake that's got some pretty good movement going. But before I even start any of that, let's break down the cover that you're going to find and what's going to be around that cover. Because this is really going to help you in breaking down what to use. And I truly, really, really recommend having at least four rods tied up with four different baits four different styles, for shallow water. So this way you can go from cover to cover to cover, you know, from a fall down to a cypress tree to a, you know, a rocky outcropping, and throw three different baits and catch three fish off there and be effective. All right. We'll start off with trees. And what I'm basically talking about with trees, I'm not talking about fall downs or anything else, that's a whole different side of it, is living trees. And in particular, cypress trees. Okay, with the cypress knees sticking up, and you can use this in dirty water too as a basis. But standing trees, okay, the things you're going to find around there, you know, are, you know, fish fry, brim, bugs, in particular like worms, that are coming out of the wood or out of the bottom. Sometimes you might find helga mites, a lot of nymphs. This is for fly. The fly guys love, if you throw flies, okay, you're not doing a bug-type fly, a large, like, dragonfly, a large helga mite fly, whatever. You're really missing out on a great opportunity to really catch some excellent fish around trees, especially the cypress trees. There's a ton of bugs around them. And that's why the brim are there. That's why the fry is there. But the one thing everyone misses out on with cypress trees, and they don't do it enough, is throw craws. Craw imitations, jigs. It is an excellent, absolutely excellent spot for them. The reason for that is craws love that area. 9 times out of 10, you're going to find those cypress trees near a rocky outcropping, near some sort of rock, boulder, gravel, whatever, and mud bottom. And it gives the craw an opportunity to dive into the mud, hide, plus the rocks are where they like to hide underneath and do their thing. The food is readily available. That cypress tree's got those little, you know, mossy leeches too. Nasty little spots where they can go in, feed, not have an issue. Okay? It's perfect for them. Baits for around there is literally endless. You're going to hear me talk about these three baits more than anything. It's a lipless crankbait, a crankbait, and a jig or craw imitation. Those three I love throwing. They're my confidence baits, and tubes. God, I love tubes. If you went back a year ago, I did two shows, just on tubes. I love them. If you don't enjoy throwing tubes, or you've never thrown them, or you just don't know about them, they're just awesome. All right, someone's bugging out of here. All right, JP. Just lost my train of thought. Those cypress knees. If you get close to it and you look in the water, because it is getting clear, you're going to see everything, okay? And you see craws. You see a baby crawfish on one of the cypress knees or up the trunk a little bit. Guess what? Tubes, craw imitations all the way. I'm not going to throw a rattle trap. I'm not going to throw a crankbait. I'm going to throw that craw imitation. And how I'm going to do that, and one of my favorites is the Strike King. Space Monkey is a great one. The craw itself, both are excellent. Everyone has their own thing. More power to you. Actually, the Gulp Ghost Shrimp is turning into one of my favorites. It's got the arms on it. It just works really well. Also, a tube or a jig work really well as well. But we're going to talk about the craw. We're going to base this all off the craw imitation. You can do the same thing with the jig and everything else. Before I cast anywhere around it, the first thing I'm going to do is actually throw that bait and let it connect, and hopefully it's going to stick to the tree itself. Okay? And most of the time it's a pitch. This way I can lightly just let it stick on that thing and slowly, I'm talking about real slow, drag it into the water. Okay? If there's a bass that's sitting underneath the tree, the knees underneath the nastiness that's there, okay? They're sitting underneath there, they're looking up, because bass like to feed up. Upslung mouth, eyes on top of their head, they're looking up 90% of the time, okay? So he's sitting there, boom, there's something there. He looks at it, because now there's movement, right? Would that bait just hit that log? Plus, there's a sound, okay? Cypress is dense, but it's also sends out a lot of vibration. Smack a cypress tree and see what happens. You'll see stuff you never even thought was around that thing shoot out, okay? So it hits that log, it's coming down, the bass sees it, it's in the water. Now he has a visual of what it really is. Here's his crawl. This crawl is climbing back down there. He's trying to get away. And literally, I'll just let it slide down, and you guys see it, slide down all the way to the bottom. Okay, and once it hits the bottom, let it sit there. It's going to drive you insane. Let it sit there for 10, 15 seconds. Okay? And look for any movement. You'll see that belly kind of roll. You see that white of the belly, and you're like, oh, there he is. And that bass is going to sit there, and he's going to watch that bait. He's going to come up and eat it right away because he's not seeing, he doesn't know what it really is. It could have been a stick. It could have been whatever. But the moment you start to move that, and this is critical, the first movement isn't a pop. It isn't, you know, reeling all the way back in. It's just taking the rod tip and sweeping it off, you know, just above the water line. So you just drag it along the bottom like that crawl is finally moving. And don't stop. Once you start sweeping, start reeling. So it kind of picks up a little bit of speed and stays right along the bottom. Same thing a crawfish will do. And that crawl in open water isn't going to stop. They will not stop unless they have to, unless they need to defend themselves. Okay? That bait is going to, or that crawl, he's going to book it so he gets the next set of cover. This is critical, especially in rocks, especially in brush piles. Around logs that are, you know, cut logs that are in the water, you'll see sometimes, is the crawl will move from, it's like bounding. He's bounding from cover to cover like in the military, okay? He's going to bound from cover to cover for safety reasons. As long as you keep that bait moving, you'll realize that bass will come out, he'll follow him for a second. As soon as you see him following that bait, give it a pop. Okay, pop it, you know, a couple of times. Just get it, make it look like he's trying to get away. As soon as you do that, you better hold on that rod tight, because here he comes. He's going to hammer this bait, okay? It is absolutely, it's a bone-crushing hit, okay, because he doesn't want that crawl to get away. It's a great food source for him, you know, and it's just awesome, all right? That's one. Second style that I throw more than anything around them is I love throwing the lipless cranks, don't get me wrong, but if you haven't thrown them before and don't have a good supply, please don't throw them around the cypress tree. You'll just get hung up and I'll just drive you insane. Is a crankbait. Y'all, if you see a bunch of brim, a bunch of shad, fry, whatever around a cypress tree, and you're not throwing a crankbait, you're just wrong. One with some rattle in it, you know, it's just awesome. How you do this is you launch that bait past the cypress tree, okay, and then start cranking it back. Let me take a step back here. When throwing crankbaits, please, I know everyone loves braid, okay, but please use mono. The reason for it is because of strictly for cypress knees and throwing on cypress trees. And that is, when you're cranking that bait in, right, you want that crankbait to smack in every last limb, knee, root, stepmother, whatever. You want it to smack that thing, okay? What will happen sometimes, too, is you'll get hung up, all right? The reason you use the mono is when you get hung up like that, all right, you're basically what they call bowing. And you're going to put some pressure on the rod, grab the line above the reel, give it a pull, and let it snap. okay, what will happen is that stretch of the mono is going to turn into like a slingshot, right? So it's got pressure, and it stretches. When you release the pressure, it's going to shoot back and actually push your crankbait off the bottom, off the snag, okay? And when it does that, it's going to push it back. It's going to shoot it forward. If there's any bass within a 5-foot radius, here's what I hit it, okay? It is one of my favorite techniques. When I get snagged up, I don't snap the rod tip, all right? Because the feel of a snag and a fish are two different things. Okay, so a really good rod, the G Loomis rods, I can't say enough about them, especially the older ones. Awesome. Anyway, you feel that, you snap it off there, you better have you're real ready to catch up to that line. It's going to snap at least 6 to 8 inches forward, and you need a little bow in your line if you're not ready for it. So you do it, you start reeling, and all of a sudden you feel that with a crankbait, especially on mono, it's going to feel weird. It's going to feel like you have another snag, but you watch your line. I can't stress this enough with bass fishing, is watch your line. Because a crankbait, when it comes off, can come off straight at you, okay? When you have a fish on, it's not going to come straight at you. It's going to go side to side. The bass is going to come up from one side. Okay, let's say he comes up, if you're thinking about a clock, right, and we're talking about straight behind the bait, that bass is going to come up from, either, let's see here, like 4:30, 5 o'clock, okay? He's going to exit his advance at about 7:30, 8 o'clock direction, okay? So that's a lateral movement. And you're going to see that in the line. It's going to shoot to one side or another when that fish hits. As soon as he grabs that thing, hammer him. You've got stretch in the line. You've got the bow and the rod to catch up to. And that's why you see Bill Dance and everyone else doing this crazy hook set, is because you got to catch up that stretch in the line. And that's the biggest thing, is catch up in line with crankbaits. That's basically it, throwing around cypress snakes. Period, end point. It's, got to get that line caught up and, jigs, tubes, the usual suspects. All right, let's see here. That's trees. Brush. Okay, I classify brush as two different, along with fall downs. And I had an argument with the guy about this about a year ago. Why do I classify it as, fall downs with brush? Reason is 9 times out of 10, when a tree falls, the limbs are coming with it. And everyone, true bass fishers, knows that when the limbs in the water are considered brush. So it only makes sense. Plus, you fish them the same way. All right? But with brush, you're going to find that you're going to have a lot more brim and fish type bait around these things. The reason for that, it's cover just like the bass. It's a way that they can hide and do really well. So baits that I throw around brush are weedless flukes, weedless swim baits are key, especially in any of them that look like brim. I love throwing those around there. Tubes, a swimming tube. All right, let's break down swimming tubes for a second here. Between swimming tubes and bottom tubes. Swimming tubes are tubes that never hit the bottom, okay? Bottom tubes are ones that are imitating crawfish. Crawfish are feeding brim. Okay, two different styles of setup, two different retrieves, two different everything, okay? When throwing swimming tubes, the way you rig them is with a tube hook or a shrimp hook. If you live along the coast, you know what I'm talking about. They've got a real rounded, blunt head and a short hook, okay? I love them for swimming tubes. They've got just enough weight. They put the weight right where it needs to be, and that's midway in the tube body, and the hook comes out within closer to the tube body itself and doesn't hang back and get caught up in the tentacles. So, what you do at the tackle shop, when you're buying tube hooks or shrimp hooks, okay, or shrimp jigs, is you buy the tube itself. I use 1/8 ounce shrimp hooks, or shrimp jigs, excuse me, or 1/8 ounce tube hooks. Okay, and when I rig them, I rig a pack at a time. And I match my colors and my tubes to my tube or shrimp jigs, if that makes any sense. Okay? And I match them from halfway to the body is where I want the eye to come out the top of the tube. Okay? And that hook, for the bend in the hook, to come out just behind the body of the jig, or just behind the body of the tube itself. All right? I'll throw a picture up here soon on Yak Angler on just what I'm talking about. Okay? With that eyelet back from the normal spot you normally hook a tube in, okay, it's going to allow that, when it hits the water, it's going to make it spin. Okay? It's just through the hydrodynamic forces and whatever. It makes it spin. But what it also does is that when you retrieve it, like you would walk, like a walk in the dog bait, it's actually going to make that bait underwater walk the dog. And for those of you that don't throw tubes for speckled trout or red drum, puppy drum, I'm giving away one of my biggest secrets right now. When they're submerged and they're not hitting a mirror lure, which is, it doesn't happen a lot, but sometimes it does. And a regular retrieve with a swim bait doesn't work. I throw a tube on and I start killing them. Okay? Because you actually walk, it'll actually shoot from side to side and not in a direct, straightforward motion. Check, if you ever get a chance and you get to a pool and you can try this, watch this bait. It'll actually shoot forward, curve, and slightly turn back towards the fish if it's coming up behind them. It is the coolest thing. It is one of my favorite things to throw. And it's something that I usually keep my mouth shut on, but it is a killer style. It's a killer way of throwing them. And I learned this from Kevin Van Dam. He had he did a video or TV show. It was Strike King show, whatever. He was throwing this bait in Lake Michigan. Okay, the other guy was throwing a regular tube on the bottom and everything else. Here's KVD up front, just kind of popping the rod tip, reeling this thing in, and absolutely slaughtering not only largemouth but smallmouth. And I'm not talking small fish; I'm talking monsters. All right, I went, oh, that's awesome. Went ahead, did it here. We have Lake Smith right down the road. I fished a local tournament, just using tubes, and I won it. There's an absolute awesome little setup. And if you don't use it or don't know how to, or you haven't tried it yet, please go ahead and try it. It is killer. All right. So anyway, more bass catches more bass than KVD. Yeah, that might be true. But KVD's got five Bassmaster championships? Just saying. Anyway. But around brush, you lost sound. See? See what happens? See, folks, if you don't talk smack on the MoBass or KVD, you won't have any sound issues. But around brush, okay? When you walk that tube through there, it's going to naturally be weedless. Why? Because you're moving it through there, it hits, it's got a soft head in front of it, it's going to bounce it off there. Much similar to a crankbait, all right? But instead of having, six hooks from the trebles, you're going to have one. It's really easy to slime that off there and have no issues, okay? If you're starting to get caught, move that head, point a little bit forward so you can skin hook the hook, and now you have a weedless setup. I swear by them. Along with swim jigs, around brush, and I'm gonna add vegetation into the brush as well, for simplicity reasons. Because I fish in the same way, weedless style, tearing through there. And if you, if you want to, another bait that works really well along brush, and a lot of people don't like to throw them because they do get hung up a lot, is a lipless crank. And the only way I throw a lipless crank around brush is if I burn it. Okay? And I just want that bait to tick the top of the branches if they touch them at all. You know, almost waking it, especially if the brush is right, right almost to the surface or at the surface or just barely sticking up out of it. When you burn it like that, that nose is going to dig a little bit farther forward, okay? That's going to tear through there, bounce off, and you won't have any issues. If you do get snagged, again, just a couple of snaps of the rod tip. A lot of times it'll break it free. You better be able to catch up to that sucker before it sinks. And I really use this more for those of us that, have thrown lipless cranks a lot. When I'm talking about lipless cranks, I'm talking strictly. I don't use any others. I love Rattle Trap. Don't get me wrong. That's what I started on. But the Strike King Red Eye Shads are just, they're all I use, period. They're just awesome little baits. So that's basically it for brush. The usual things. Are what I use. All right. The next one, and the one that everyone, it's easy to see next to trees and everything else, that everyone really doesn't pay real close attention to, I find, is rocks. Okay? And rocks are awesome, especially in clear lakes. Why is that? The reason rocks are great is because they create a lot of shadow and a lot of areas for bass to hide in. Smallmouth love rocks. Big largemouth love rocks. Why? Because they hold everything in the food chain. They hold the small bugs and the big bugs that bass fry and large bass will eat. If you're a smallmouth fisherman, you know that underneath most rocks, 90% of the time, you're going to find either a craw or a helgramite. And helgramites are awesome. And I talk about Strike King all the time. Strike King makes a great helgramite lure. But if you don't have a helgramite lure, this is where one of my favorite baits in all the world is a creature bait. When I need to fish a bait slow and on the bottom, a creature-style bait, a beaver bait, the one that has all the tentacles hanging off of it, and you go, what the hell does that look like? I'm telling you, you put that next to a helgramite in the water, you're like, damn. Okay? That is where your motor oil colors, your browns, your oranges with the browns, like a clown color, that's where you can throw those. Okay? It is truly the spot to throw those, especially if the bass, are screwed up from temperature changes, from barometer changes. You throw that around a set of rocks and you pull it out, from the holes and stuff like that, real slow. It's like ringing the dinner bell. Okay, here they come. You better hold on tight. You hammer them. So beaver style baits, crawl baits, again tubes, bottom tubes are where they're at. My bottom tube setup is really simple. And actually, I stole it from Jeff Little. Excellent smallmouth fisherman, one of the best ones that I've ever had the opportunity of fishing with. And that is taking a egg sinker, dropping a couple drops of super glue inside the head, inside the body itself. Pushing that egg sinker all the way to the top until it stops, okay? Letting that harden up. And then taking a glass rattle, putting a couple more drops of super glue in there, dropping the glass rattle inside there, just for a little bit of sound. And then just taking a regular extra wide gap hook, depending on the size of the bait. If you're using the small ones, Like the Bitsy Bugs or, Bullfrog baits. Yakingler sells them. Great little bait. I actually just take a regular octopus hook and just nose hook the tube. Works excellent. Bottom tubes. When I'm talking about bottom tubes, low as your ass, are the ones that I'm going to fish only on the bottom. I'm not going to try to swim them in. I'm not going to try anything else. Strictly on the bottom, okay? So I just nose hook it. If I'm using the octopus hook, and actually I've actually used that more than anything else recently. Just nose hook it. I'm using the Y-Gex. I'm working through some nasty, you know, not just rock, but there's brush on top of it or whatever. That's when I'll use a Y-Gap hook. You always want the bend in the hook on an extra Y-Gap, right? It comes down, comes up, and then stops, and then the whole kind of hook point is, you know, shoots back. I want where that transition is from the bend to that partition that comes back is the best way to put it. For that spot right there, All right, Chip's headed out of here. Thanks, Chip. The app is doing well. Excellent. For that bend to come out right where, or for that bend to stop or start right at the base of where the tentacles start, okay? Easiest way to do it. This is where I'm using my 3-inch tubes, stuff like that. And fishing it, pretty simple. Cast it, bring it through those rocks, let it fall in a hole, pop it out of there, let it fall in another hole if you can. Let it sit on top of the rock for a second, and then drop it down. Absolutely awesome. This is where the, you know, it is just an awesome little setup. Jigs, this is where I throw a lot of my jigs, and I do really well. This is my lipless crank area. This is my crankbait area. Rocks are a great way of learning baits, big swim baits. If you don't throw a big swim bait around rocks, you're missing out, around docks. I like docks and rocks. And socks on cop. I almost caught myself there. That would have been embarrassing. But definitely, you know, rocks are a great opportunity to really perfect or understand the bait that you're going to be throwing. Nice. wow, it's been a long day. Anyway, as long as you understand that what also holds around rocks are bait fry, bugs, again, you know, craws. If you have moving water, the backside's going to hold bait fish. It's going to hold the stripers, bass, smallmouth, whatever. You understand that, you're going to do well. Now, how does this pertain to the shallow water? Okay. Again, on clear lakes, the cover that you find is where the bass are going to be. They're not going to be sitting, you know, on a hump. They're not going to be sitting, you know, in places like that. They're going to be stuck up tight to structure. Moses head out. Later, buddy. So, that's why I said I carry 4 rods. And I'm going to break down each rod here to go with each set of cover. You heard I talk about tubes, about craw imitations. I'm going to have 1 or 2 rods hooked up with that, okay? My next one is going to be a crank or a lipless crank, all right? And actually, we're going to break down 3 rods here. One's going to be a craw imitation. One's going to be a crank or a lipless crank. And then the other one is something I really haven't talked about all that much. And that is a jig. I am not a huge jig thrower. I'm not a huge jig fan, per se. But they work really well. And when I'm breaking down jigs, I break down football head jigs all the way to swim jigs, because they are that versatile. And then personally, I use one jig and I'll swim it in anyway. Anyway, so I have a tube or crawl, I have a lipless crank or crankbait, and then I have a jig tied up. My last one is a creature bait, usually. Again, one of my absolute favorites is a brown or orange with some sort of brown in it, beaver style, with as many little tentacles and frills as I can find. They work great. They work around everything. They imitate bugs. And the bigger I can find, the better. I absolutely love throwing them. But let me break down talk about something else here. And with cranks or lipless cranks. And when I throw, before I even start throwing cranks or lipless cranks, especially if I'm fishing a tournament, okay, or I'm fishing a new body of water, I like to get there early for tournaments, especially if it's a clear lake, because I do have to match the hatch as close as possible. The bait that I use, or the technique that I use to match that hatch, is a cast net. And please check your local ordinances, state laws, whatever. Is what I will do is, the first thing I do, I don't take any rods with me. All I need to take is a cast net and a camera. And what I do is I get out there and I throw a cast net and I catch as many different types of fish, crawfish, whatever, anything that the bass could be possibly feeding on is a catch. Okay? And I take pictures of it. If I throw a cast net and I catch a school of shad, and I look through all of them, and they all look the same except for maybe five, guess what I'm doing? I'm taking pictures of those five as well, along with, the ones that look the same. It's a great way of personalizing your bait for that area. I've actually got tackle boxes with cranks, lipless cranks, and crawl and swim baits that I've colored just for that lake. Give you an idea. What was that lake? Lake Prince, I think. I talked about that one before. I think that's what I'm thinking about. Has a shad, okay? Very similar to the lavender sexy shad in the striking line of lipless cranks and cranks, but it has two spots on it. It has one near the tail as well, next to the head, next to the one by the head. And I didn't realize that while I was fishing the two-day tournament on there. At the first day, I only had two fish out of my five limit, okay? And no one was really doing well. It was really hard fishing. But on one of my last casts, I snagged one of these shad, okay? And when I saw that spot, I went, oh! So before I do my next cast, I grab a Sharpie marker. I carry a bunch of Sharpies with me in my tackle box. And I put a dot right where that dot was on that shad. And you would have thought I just rang the dinner bell. That's when I caught my two fish. Okay, before we had to head in. The next day, I got out there. I limited out and was calling bass within 20 minutes of my first cast. It was just awesome. That's when I started really doing that a lot, is cast netting, bait, figuring out what it is, especially crawfish. You catch a couple craws, and one's blue, which you find when they're molting. And another one is deep, dark red. I'll keep all the browns at home, and I'll use blue and reds. And, be tearing them up while the other one else is losing their mind. I come after the birds. I'll throw bird-style baits. Actually, I, I, I took a hidden spook and put on some feathers on the side. So I wasn't willing to spend $50 on a bait. Let's see how it would work. And they work really well, actually. But use the bird-style baits in late spring, after the birds have laid their eggs and the babies are up there and whatever. And I use the junior spooks and how you make them. Take a junior spook, okay, the ones that are about 3 inches long, and then just super glue some you got an old spinnerbait skirt. That's all you need to do. Just glue those spinnerbait skirts on the side. It's basically what those bird baits are. And then just work that from the shoreline or from underneath the tree, and you'd be surprised how well it works. Let's sit there and flounder a little bit, snap the rod tip. Poppers work great. A rebel popper was one of my favorites as well. Let's see here. I think I covered everything for shallow water. Except for one thing, fluorocarbon. Okay? Even on my crankbait rod with the motto, Deadly Strike Time, no, I was planning on doing a nice long show. And next week's going to be even longer.
Hey, I was just checking.
Yeah, no. But with... With clear water, like a lot of these lakes are, you're going to need at least 2 feet of fluorocarbon leader. I use 12-pound up to 20-pound exclusively Yoziri Hybrid or Vanish from Berkeley or Seaguar. I actually use Seaguar more than anything now, because anyone who's ever used the Yoziri Hybrid knows that if you used it 2 years ago, that it made an excellent knot. Real soft, really nice. Whatever it is, I just bought one there, Matt, the other day. I cannot tell you, not the damn thing. It is super stiff. I don't know if they changed their process, they do it, or I just got a bad batch. God, it's awful. But anyway. At least 2 feet of fluorocarbon. And everyone goes, well, you need at least 20 feet of... No. Check it out, y'all. All right? Bass tend to get tunnel vision, okay? When they're sitting there and looking around, they can see everything, okay? When things start to, when they see something, they want to eat it, they really focus hard on that. They close down their senses and they really tunnel out that thing. So, 2 feet... a fluorocarbon is going to be fine, because once they get close to it, they're not going to see the braid, they're not going to see the knots or whatever else, they're just going to see the bait. That's all they're going to focus on. Like I said, at least 2 feet, I'll go up to 4 sometimes, but even on, like I said, on the mono rod, I throw that fluorocarbon in there just for that little bit of extra stealth. And I'm not going to talk about rods or styles of rods or reels or anything else. Why? Because there's no, I don't see a reason why. If you love running spinning rods and you have a favorite style, more power to you. Because I find 9 times out of 10 that if you love a spinning rod or a style of rod or whatever, you can throw any bait you wanted to and adapt yourself to that bait. But if you want to go out and buy a crankbait rod, you just want to buy a swimbait rod, or a worm rod, or a flippin' stick, or whatever. More power to you. But, yeah, I mean, shallow or clear water takes an understanding of what's there. Matching the hatch, which I can't stress enough, you have to match that bait, okay, to what's in there. Being really quiet, okay. Yes, the bass guys catch a lot of fish in shallow water, but they're also casting a lot farther than a lot of us can sitting down. And they're catching those fish much farther away than we can. So being able to slide up there, okay, make a good cast, I stress in clear water, making intelligent casts. What I mean by that is, if you've got a spot which got a ton of brush and it's going to be really hard to make that make a good cast in there without getting hung up and ruining the spot, and that moving 2 feet one direction is going to make a better cast, then do it. If you don't spend time out in the backyard casting, flipping, and becoming efficient at hitting the spot 75% of the time, then please go out there and practice. Take your kayak. Who cares about the neighbors? You know, pull the kayak out, sit on it, and make some casts at, you know, a teacup, at a plastic bottle. I can stick a jig 30 yards away in a dip can. 8 out of 10 times. Okay? Because I practice all the time, and my neighbors make fun of me all the time. Yet, when their kids' kite's in the tree and they can't get it down, who do they call? Me. Why? Because I can flip a jig up there and catch the kite 9 times out of 10. You know, and having that ability to be able to do that, you'll find, you know, when you go down to the boondoggle in Jacksonville, or I said Jacksonville, in Merritt Island, Florida, and you've got that big red, you know, doing his thing. You know, we all know when we see those tails, we all get this in our mind. That you can make a a. Cast accurately, you're not going to lose the fish or spook them, because you can go, okay, he's there, cast in front of him, I know exactly how much power I need, you know, to get that bait, you know, to be 10 feet in front of him, blah, blah, blah. You already know it. So being able to do that is a great thing. But yeah, I think that's about it for shallow water. Again, I'm going to post this up to the Yak Angler site on the shallow water thread. I really appreciate some feedback on shallow water. I'll do the first 20 minutes of next show talking about shallow water again before we delve into deep water, clear water fishing. Again, similar but different. Different style, different feel, different everything. Okay. With that, I'd like to thank Matt for hanging in there with me.
Hey, no problem, man. Good show.
Thanks, man. It was a ton of fun. Wish I could have fished with you more this weekend at Kip's Peak, but that was actually a charter I was doing. So.
I understood. It was cool, man. That's kind of why we went on our own and, you know, let you go do it. So.
Yeah. With that, I'd like to thank everyone that showed up again. I can't say enough about Jackson Kayak. Awesome stuff, awesome people. Please check them out. I'd like to thank Mustad, YakAngler.com. You know, wouldn't be able to do this without them. Robson and Jackson Paddles. Y'all, I'm telling you right now, damn, the stuff that we're coming out with here soon. By the boondoggle, we should have our first line of paddles out, and should be awesome. And if I'm forgetting someone, I do apologize. Orca Coolers. I can't thank Orca Coolers enough for everything they do. All right, tune in tomorrow night to Chip Show. It's going to be a great show. Download the apps for the iPhone or Droid for the Kayak Fishing Radio. We love you if you do. It's a free app. So this way you can be driving the road and go, oh, it's Wednesday night. I want to hear that guy talk. Let's tune in. You can do that through your phone speakers. Please do not put it to your ear while driving. It's unsafe. And what also isn't safe is going out in the water without your PFD. Always wear your PFD when in the kayak. With that, I'd like to thank everyone for showing up again. Always wear your PFD. Take kid fishing. And remember, it's always time to... That's right, Gangnam styled up. All right, everybody, have a great night, have a safe weekend, and catch you next time on Kayak Fishing Radio, Mid-Atlantic. Good night, everybody.